Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to my colleague, Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field, back from Cleveland, Wes, and wow, 27-21 in overtime. The Packers keep their season alive once again in a sudden-death situation, and we'll be waiting to hear the news on Aaron Rodgers. Just to tell all the fans right now, at the time we are taping this episode, we do not know anything new, any news at all on Aaron Rodgers and his status for this week for the game in Carolina. But this game in Cleveland, the Packers' season was on the brink, Wes. It was 21-7 heading into the fourth quarter, and Brett Hundley got hot, running a spread offense, led two touchdown drives in the fourth quarter to tie it up, and you got to tip your hat to the young quarterback.
I'll say this, Mike. I don't know how this season's going to play out. Three more weeks left in the regular campaign here, but, I mean, people are getting their money's worth in terms of the drama of this thing. Brett Hundley and really this entire team, those last 20, 21 minutes of that game, pretty incredible how everything sort of came together for Green Bay. You and I were looking at each other in the press box at First Energy Stadium after the Browns go up 21-7. You said it on Twitter. I mean, it was. The season was on the brink at that point. And really, nobody could blink anymore. You couldn't give up any more points. The offense couldn't give up any more possessions. They needed production. They made that switch to those empty sets, giving that, you know, spreading out the Browns, giving Hundley a better read on where the blitzes are coming from and what the concepts were that Greg Williams was going to be throwing at the Packers offense. And lo and behold, he finds his favorite target, Davante Adams, twice. Jamal Williams has some very clutch runs along the way. Some big plays defensively. Trevor Davis gets a big punt return. All three phases really kick things up a notch to come out with a much-needed victory.
Yeah, and I really liked the way Brett Hundley played in the fourth quarter. How can you not? And I think it's another example of his growth and development. And I know Packers fans were hoping for better than three wins without Aaron Rodgers. You were hoping for maybe a fourth one, go 4-4 in these eight games, you know, since Rodgers went down in Minnesota. But Hundley won these last two in overtime to get to three wins. And the way he did it in this one, it was interesting to me because in the Baltimore game at Lambeau Field, Mike McCarthy hesitated to really open it up like that, to spread them out and say, okay, the game's in our quarterback's hands, here we go. But desperate times call for desperate measures, right? I mean, the Packers didn't have any choice. You weren't going to be able to grind it out on the ground against a run defense like Cleveland's. You open it up and, you know, for the most part, it was manageable down and distances. The third downs were all fairly short. There wasn't anything where they were in a huge third and long situation. Hundley throwing a lot of quick stuff to the wide receivers to the outside, hitting some slants over the middle to move the chains. Lance Kendricks, Davante Adams, you mentioned it. Just really, really efficient offense. And then also a very calming presence when things could have gotten a little chaotic there at the end with the touchdown, then the replay review, then the 10-second runoff. You're down to 23 seconds on the clock. They're going to start it when the referee gives the signal. And he just calmly takes the snap and fires the back shoulder to Davante Adams, and the ball game's tied.
Yeah, the thing that really stood out to me in those last few series, one, I mean, they get three touchdowns on four drives to end the game. That's the kind of production you're looking for. Every single point, getting down in the red zone, creating opportunities and being consistent. But the third down production, I mean, they were 0-for-6, Michael, in the first half, although they did convert two fourth downs on that opening series to get on the board.
Right.
In the second half and beyond, 8-of-10. So, I mean, for them to really rally the horses there and find a way to sort of sustain itself, very important. I mean, Jordy Nelson, I was asking him this in the locker room afterwards. I mean, they make that switch to opening things up. And as you said, logic really says that isn't the way you go with a young quarterback. You typically want to keep people in there to help protect him. But for whatever reason with Hundley, it's worked so well. And for them to be able to get the underneath passing game going, to get guys extending, to keep the drives going, and then honestly just have Davante Adams make some tremendous plays down the stretch. I mean, you have the third and short situation right before the end of regulation. They call timeout. They move Adams to the slot. He does the quick slant. Amazing feat. Gets the first down. Jamal Williams has a big 13-yard carry. They power their way into the end zone. They go into overtime. And being able to get that short underneath pass to Adams, have him spin out of that and find the open field for a 25-yard touchdown and Forrest Gump his way right up the tunnel. It just, there was just something that just seemed like there was something going on here that was bigger than football. This was a team that was coming together and really rebounded and showed a lot of resiliency, I thought, in the end. And a lot of that, Mike, goes back to Brett Hundley and the fact that he stayed calm, he stayed confident. And for a young guy that had never started a really meaningful game in the NFL before up until a month, 2 months ago, to be able to do that, I think, says a lot about him.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy talked about this team. He sort of reiterated the same line as after the Tampa Bay game. This team is finding different ways to win football games, and that's how you become better as a football team. The idea being now that the Packers will be better with Aaron Rodgers coming back, hopefully, for these last three games to try to make a run at a playoff spot. I know the odds are still not the best. I mean, the Packers are going to have to beat three pretty darn good teams, two of them being two of the legitimate Super Bowl contenders in the NFC, in order to even get to 10 wins. And then you've still got to get some help and all of that. But Mike McCarthy believes he's got a better team now because of these different ways they found to win games, and now it has to carry over with into these final three.
The ninth-ranked rushing defense, it was tough to get those yards on the ground. They needed Hundley to make some plays. He did that, and more than anything else, Mike, the fact that he took this team and found a way to win in crunch time. I don't care what the record was of the Cleveland Browns. That's an NFL football team. That was a team playing in its own home environment, trying to get that first victory. I thought Hundley did a remarkable job of showing poise there and got a huge victory for this team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, plenty more to talk about in this overtime victory. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. So, Wes, the Packers get the game to overtime on the touchdown to Adams with 17 seconds left in regulation. You lose the overtime coin toss, so the Cleveland Browns get the ball on that opening overtime possession. It's 3rd and 2, and a pass rush missing Nick Perry, who was inactive with an injury, that was really not having the best of days by any stretch. DeShone Kizer had a lot of time most of the day to sit back there and try to find his receivers. They got to him on this 3rd and 2, and it ended up being the defensive play of the game. Clay Matthews chases him down, gets a piece of his arm as he's trying to launch a ball deep down the middle of the field. It kind of skies and flutters up into the air. A whole bunch of Packers have a shot at it. Rookie safety Josh Jones comes down with it for his first career interception, and it's the play that sets up the winning points.
Yeah, it's funny. I made this joke on Twitter. It almost reminded me of the schoolyard, like 500, yeah. You know, where the guy goes back and throws it up and everybody converges,
right.
And you hope you don't fall on the ground and nick up your arm. But this was, on so many levels, I thought this was a big play for the defense. Let's be honest, Mike, way too much production in the first half for the Browns. Josh Gordon got going. They have very dynamic receivers. For as many issues as they've had turning over the football, if they can get the ball to their playmakers, there's guys that can get downfield. But seeing how the defense rebounded, particularly in that fourth quarter, getting some stops, and then that overtime was huge. Clay Matthews, again, as you mentioned, pass rush wasn't getting home on Kizer, not getting the hits they want to get on him. But Matthews was relentless on that play.
Yeah.
I mean, he's chasing down a guy that has rushed for over 300 yards this season. I think that I saw a stat from Cleveland. He's the first rookie quarterback to do that, setting a record this year for scrambling yards. There's a lot of ways that play, when it breaks down, could have gone wrong for the Packers defense. But Matthews stays with him. He gets his arm on the throwing arm of Kizer to pop that thing up. And then Josh Jones, as he said, I mean, that thing's just hanging up there. And there's a lot, actually, as you mentioned, those are tough plays sometimes because you have a bunch of guys on the Packers side of the ball that are all trying to make something happen. Blake Martinez is in there.
Yeah.
He even said to him after, he's like, oh, I thought I had it. And then certainly you have Josh Jones jump up there and make the biggest play of his young career.
Yeah, it's not like a baseball outfield where somebody's in charge and gets to call for it. I mean, it's football. The ball is up there. If you sit there and hope that your teammate is going to go after it, the next thing you know, a guy from the other team is going to jump in and catch the ball. So you just go after it. Everybody goes after it. It's a spur of the moment thing. Josh Jones, his leaping ability obviously came in handy because he got up there high enough to get his hands on it before anybody else comes down with it. The Packers second interception of the game, actually, after the one by HaHa Clinton-Dix at the end of the first half that took some potential points off the board for the Cleveland Browns. So some struggles on the defensive side, but they came through there. It sets up the Packers at the 42-yard line on the plus side of the field. You're looking at really needing just one first down, maybe not even one first down, to give Mason Crosby a shot to win. They get the one first down. Then it's a third and six, I believe it was, from the 25-yard line. You know you're going to try Mason Crosby if you don't get the first down here. And it would be for the win because it's sudden death in that situation with Cleveland starting with the ball. But so you throw a very safe pass. You got a couple blockers in front of Devontae Adams. He spins out of the tackle, and then, as you said, he Forrest Gumped it up the tunnel. Just kept on running. Some of his teammates just followed him too. It was like, all right, game over. We're getting on the plane coming home.
It's really interesting too, Mike, because if you look at the stat pack, and I haven't seen anything from Elias yet, but Devontae Adams was shut out in the first half. No catches on two targets. Finished the game with 10 catches for 84 yards and two touchdowns. That touchdown was huge. There's no doubt about it. Unbelievable play. But I think that third and two play where they do that quick slant off the timeout, Adams gets the 5-yard gain there. If you don't get that, now you're looking at roughly a 52, 53-yard field goal attempt by Mason Crosby.
And as windy as it was, there was definitely no gimme. Crosby was even, during that game, he was kicking his extra points from the hash marks as opposed to the middle of the field because of the wind. So something that was 50-plus in that wind, Crosby is normally pretty high percentage there, but it definitely would have been a lower percentage kick.
Because that's a big thing that Clay Matthews said. With them getting the ball at the 42, it actually puts everyone at ease a little bit because you are kind of in field goal range. But if you don't get two first downs, then you're in a situation where you're looking at a long field goal. You miss that. Cleveland gets it back, and you know what that does. But, again, getting back to the original point with Devontae Adams, for him to be the guy that the Packers look to, that Brett Hundley look to, I said this afterwards on Twitter. I mean, it's the maturation and evolution of a playmaker. The Packers have a lot of weapons there. When you look in over the years, what Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb have done, some huge game-changing type plays, games that have led directly to victories in the waning moments of contest. Devontae Adams has grown up underneath those players. And to see him be able to do that, you saw Jordy Nelson as Adams is running to the end zone, his arms up in the air. He knows that he's gone.
Yeah.
Adams protects the football, makes sure there's no Leon Lett type scenario on the play, gets in the end zone. And again, for the Packers offense to rebound that way and to have Adams now well on his way to his first 1,000-yard season come up, you can't ask for much more out of the 24-year-old receiver.
Yeah, and going back to where we started this conversation in this segment about the defense making the big play in overtime, I want to go back to the last stop that the defense had in the fourth quarter, which in my opinion is a very small and a lot of times overlooked strategic move by a head coach. And what I'm talking about is the Packers got the ball back for that game-tying drive because of a challenge on the pass to David Joku that was originally ruled a catch and a first down. Very well could have ended the game. The Packers would have been in very dire straits to try to get the ball back with any time left in order to try to tie the game. Mike McCarthy had kept one timeout in his pocket, and you have to do that outside of the two-minute warning. You've got to hang on to one timeout so that you can challenge a play like that. He had been using his timeouts. Yeah. If he had used his last one, the Packers don't get to challenge that play. And I just think it's worth pointing out, those are the small strategic things that a lot of people take for granted. But the head coach on the sidelines knows exactly what the situation is. And even though he'd like to save as much time as possible for his quarterback, you can't burn that last time out before the two-minute warning because of a play like the one to Joku.
Yeah, I think McCarthy was exceptional in this game in terms of the game management. I know a lot of people look at the risk that they took with that field goal early on. But even Jordy Nelson said in the locker room afterwards, that shows the confidence he has in the offense. And to be honest with you, it also shows the confidence that if they don't get the first down, they're going to be able to come back. That timeout right there, you saw how Clinton Dix running in the way he did, a phenomenal challenge, and it ended up being a game-changing type play off the field on the sideline.
Yeah, absolutely. It changed the whole thing around. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, we talked all last week about the Green Bay Packers making an impact play on special teams that helped to win that game against Tampa Bay and how that needed to continue. Special teams made two big ones in Cleveland. The opening series of the game, a fake punt, a snap, a direct snap to Jermaine Whitehead, the up back there in front of the punter, on a play where I believe it was Geronimo Allison as the gunner was sent in motion to clear out the left side, and then that's where Whitehead ran. He had to break one tackle. He gets the first down, leads to a touchdown. And then the even bigger one, based on the time of the game, Trevor Davis dodges, I'm not sure how many tacklers, but he got around a lot of guys to find a seam for 65 yards late in the fourth quarter, puts the Packers only 25 yards away from the game-tying touchdown, and that was what set up the overtime situation.
I want to start with that, Mike, because it was a big play that Whitehead made. I don't want to, you know, diminish that, but Mike Spofford, soothsayer, last week he wrote about it. He said it. It's going to happen. At least it felt like it was going to happen. And I'll tell you what, Mike, for the last month, Ron Zook has been saying he feels like a big return was coming. And there was proof in that pudding, because if you look at the returns on both kickoff and punt, as you mentioned in that story, Trevor Davis has broken some here. It's just been one penalty or another that brought it back, sometimes not even impacting the return itself. This particular play, they needed it. And it wasn't just like this guy has 4.4 speed, so he just blew past everybody. As Jordy Nelson said in the post-game locker room afterwards, it was multiple times that he thought that play was over. Three or four occasions where it looked like a tackler was going to get him.
Yep.
And Trevor Davis stayed aggressive. He stayed active, and his reward was a big 65-yard return. Puts the ball at the Cleveland 25-yard line for a young quarterback and an offense looking to seal that game, looking to tie it to force overtime. Couldn't ask for a bigger play. Arguably, the biggest play in a game of several plays.
Yeah, absolutely. And with regards to, you mentioned the penalties that have plagued the Packers on special teams all year, it's been an issue. And I want to take an even closer look at the Trevor Davis punt return. But one replay that I did see, I saw a moment where Joe Thomas, Packers linebacker number 48, was about to potentially hit somebody in the back, a guy who had kind of cut in front of him as he was, you know, maybe looking to set up a block. And Thomas pulled up and pulled his hands back and did not make the contact in the back. And it was right at one of the spots where Trevor Davis cut to the outside. And that's one of those where if Thomas doesn't do that, and even if he's not necessarily trying to hit him, but if he doesn't completely avoid hitting him, that flag can come out and the entire situation is different. I give credit to, you know, there were some really good blocks on that play, but it was Joe Thomas's non-block that looked really, really important.
Keep in mind, too, Mike, that is probably the most chaotic play in the National Football League, a punt return, because it's just, I mean, there's people everywhere.
Yeah.
So you look at a week ago, remember that Evan Smith play you were talking about where he ends up nudging, I forgot who it was, they called block in the back.
Yeah, Martinez. Yeah, Blake Martinez.
That's, and it was wide open in pure daylight. So if you have a situation like Thomas there where he does make contact, even if it isn't a block in the back, but the guy goes down, the referees trying to keep, you know, eight guys looking at 22 on the field might not get a clean look at it, understand what happened there. If the guy goes down and it looks like it was committed, the flag's probably coming
out. It's coming out.
So a very heady play by him. And again, the other thing I like too, you obviously have to set the table for a returner, no question about that. But the best ones in the NFL are guys that can create on their own as well. Davis did that on that play, and now he's the fifth-ranked returner in the NFL on punts, 11.7 yards per return this season. How quickly, you know, that can happen when you make a big play like that, the seventh-longest return in the NFL this season.
Yeah, well, he came through, and I mentioned in our insider inbox, I put all my chips in the middle of the table on Trevor Davis last week. I talked about him on this show. I talked about him in Final Thoughts. I wrote a story on Friday on the website that Trevor Davis is on the verge of breaking one. I believed Ron Zook. I don't always believe Ron Zook. Just kidding, Ron. I believed Ron Zook and Trevor Davis came through. That was as big as it gets.
And I got to give a shout out too to Dennis Krause. He echoed you as well when talking about the keys for this game in the pregame show on Spectrum Sports. Dennis Krause also picked a big big Trevor Davis return, and it came through.
There you go. With that, let's go to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, quickly before we go, where things stand in the NFC playoff picture? Kind of a mixed bag for the Packers over this past weekend. We had talked at the end of last week, the Thursday night game didn't go Green Bay's way with the Saints blowing their chance at the end to beat the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons get a huge win there in the NFC South. Then on Sunday, another NFC South team, the Carolina Panthers, they get a big home win over the Minnesota Vikings, snapping Minnesota's long winning streak. That doesn't help the Packers, unfortunately, as far as the wild card picture is concerned. But then the one game that did go Green Bay's way, the Seattle Seahawks take a loss in Jacksonville. So the Packers still looking, if they can run the table and get to 10-6, you're looking at trying to move ahead of either of two out of the three, the Falcons, the Panthers, or the Seahawks. So those are still the teams you want to lose. Obviously, the Packers playing the Panthers this week on Sunday in Charlotte.
Yeah, and I'll throw this in, too. If the Vikings couldn't take care of business against the Carolina Panthers, they might as well just lose the rest of their games from the Packers' regard. You know,
yeah, then it keeps the division in play.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, I give credit to the Falcons. That was a great performance, and they were very opportunistic at the end of that game. Drew Brees makes an ill-advised pass in a wonderful career, doesn't make many of those mistakes. He did in the end zone, cost the Saints the game. And as much as we make out of that wild card race, because that's what directly impacts the Packers, it's actually wide open for that division title yet, too. So seeing how all those scenarios play out, we'll have to wait and check it all out.
Yeah, the Saints and the Falcons still playing each other one more time, and the Falcons and the Panthers playing each other one more time as well.
So from the Packers' regards, you got to take care of business against the Panthers on Sunday, but it will be interesting to watch that develop because it's not easy for a division to send three teams to the playoffs because when you have competition like that, they're all playing each other, four times a season. So it'll be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, well, we're basically in as we've been for a while now. It's a week-to-week thing. The Packers simply have to keep winning. Yes, you scoreboard watch a little bit, but none of the scoreboard watching matters if the Packers don't take care of business and keep chalking up victories. So
totally. It's going to be a crazy next couple of weeks for sure.
No question about it. With that, it's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. See you next time.